from the springtime studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. It is time for another bulb saving hour of chemical free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. Are you the type who loves spring bulbs, but you hate to see their greenery turning brown in your garden? Well, I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, I'll reveal that that greenery is more important than you might imagine. Plus, lots of your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and delightfully determined demarcations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up right after the news.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and our In the News segment this week is, well, it's old news. 2003 from the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. I had lost it and then I found it, and we're calling it the other sorrel. We now quote the original author, Scott Appel, who lives and works in the Caribbean. On the island of St. Croix, it's common to pass roadside peddlers whose tables are heaped with what appear to be stubby, wine-red flower buds. Those flower buds are the seed pods of red sorrel, Hibiscus sabdariffa. The pods are edible and have an invigorating, astringent flavor, reminiscent of the unrelated herb French sorrel. In the Caribbean, the fruits are brewed in water to make a refreshing cranberry-colored tea. They're also used in salads, jellies, such as Jamaica's famous Rosella jam, sauces, soups, chutneys, pickles, tarts, pudding, syrups, and wine. Powdered red sorrel is added to commercial herb teas like Red Zinger for flavor and color. Originally native from India to Malaysia, red sorrel is now widely distributed and cultivated in tropical and subtropical regions all around the globe. It has a lot of other common names, including Roselle, Jamaican sorrel, Indian sorrel, Queensland jelly plant, sour, lemon bush, and Florida cranberry. The plant was introduced to North America in the late 19th century and was a popular garden and food crop, especially in Florida, where it was used as a warm weather substitute for cranberries. But because of the plant's zero tolerance for frost and the general decline in home preserving, it eventually went off the garden radars. Until now, red sorrel is a herbaceous annual that grows between 3 and 8 foot tall. A member of the mallow family, it bears 3 to 5 inch long narrow leaves. Its reddish stems have an upright habit, and they give the plant a solid, shrubby appearance. The flower petals are funnel-shaped, typically pale yellow, with deep red blotches at the base, and they grow up to 5 inches wide. They have a citrusy flavor. Make sure to harvest the flowers quickly, as they only last a day on the plant. Once the petals drop, the calyxes enlarge and become crisp and juicy. The leaves of red sorrel are also edible. They have a rhubarb-like taste and are served in salads and curries. The seeds are best roasted or ground to make flour for baking. In the Sudan, the seeds are fermented into a meat substitute that has a lot of nutritional value. Although red sorrel is readily available dried in African, Jamaican, and Caribbean markets in the United States, it's best when served fresh. So why not cultivate a few specimens in your vegetable or herb garden this year? The plant has ornamental pizzazz, and the ruddy stems and seed pods make interesting additions to fresh or dried arrangements. Plant seeds in individual pots in fertile, moisture-retentive, but well-drained soil 8 weeks before the last frost. Harden off seedlings completely before setting them out in a sunny site in containers. Staking is not required. Flowers appear from mid to late summer. If early frost threatens, just bring the plants inside. Hey, we grow a lot of tropical annuals. Why not try this one?
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. In just a little bit, we will talk about a very timely topic. What are you going to do with those spring bulb plants in your garden now that the flowers have faded? Well, don't touch them until you hear what's going to follow, or you may be bulb free next year. Joe, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mr. Mike. How are things in the Lehigh Valley?
Oh, they're just ducky. Actually, they'd be a lot duckier if we got more rain. We have had some real soakers, but we're still in what I call an invisible drought here, where we're many inches below where we should be.
Well, I'm calling from Cincinnati. We already discussed that you've been here before.
Yes, yes. You know, great ballpark. As I've said a couple of times on the show, especially when I used to travel a lot to give talks around the country, I would always try to finagle a ballpark visit in with that. And my crowning achievement was I went to a conference outside of Chicago that I didn't really need to go to, but it was fine, and got to see not only a ball game at Wrigley, but the Cubs played my Phillies, and it was Ryan Sandberg tribute day. So I nailed that on all corners.
Yeah, it's a great ballpark. I'm glad it's still around, Wrigley Field.
Oh, yeah, it's a shrine. All right, what can we do you for, sir?
We live in a duplex built in 1912, so the buildings are relatively close to each other, about 15 feet.
Right.
And so if my neighbor has dandelions or chickweed or something else, chances are we get it also. So I have chickweed that's been taken over. I sent you pictures. It's a duplex, so there's two front doors, and there's a walkway to each door, so the front yard is separated into three spots. And one of them is pretty much overrun with chickweed. So I did my research, and I understand some people grow chickweed. It's edible. It's called chickweed because chickens can eat it, but people can eat it also.
Oh, yeah. It is one of the foragers' favorite plants. All you need for chickweed is moisture, and you can grow as much of it as you want. But it doesn't do well in dry times or dry soils. And it's so funny, my old friend Dr. Jim Duke, who used to study the medicinal powers of wild plants for the USDA, said that people who pull up chickweed as a, quote, weed, and then plant lettuce, they're trading down in terms of nutrition.
Wow. Well, I also found out it grows fast, it spreads quickly, and it's going to take over, basically.
Chickweed?
Chickweed.
Chickweed is, to my mind, the easiest weed to eradicate, even just by hand. You know, you soak that area and really saturate the soil, and then it kind of just rolls up like a carpet. The roots are as shallow as those of any plant, and it just rolls right up. The secret is to, if you want to get rid of it, the secret is to do that before it sets those little flowers. You get your chickweed saturated and rolled up before those white flowers open, and that should be it.
I've been mowing it so the flowers don't, it doesn't produce flowers. And I understand the roots are shallow and I could pull it up. I guess it just takes time and effort, maybe do it right after it rains or something. I also saw somebody said to smother it, which you've talked about with cardboard or tarps. And since it has shallow roots, that wouldn't take like months.
Well, it depends. First of all, are we talking about flat earth?
Yes.
Okay. You're talking about, I think you're referring to soil solarization, which is where you clear the ground completely of all green material, not worrying about the roots, saturate the soil like you've never saturated anything before. In terms of a corollary, you should create the world's heaviest sponge. Really, you have watered this area until water cannot be accepted any longer. The plants or the soil puts up a little sign, no more water, please. And then you spread out clear plastic, not black. I don't know who puts these lies and misinformation out there, but you spread clear plastic that is 3 mils thick, millimeters. And then you tightly hold it down on all the corners, and over the course of a full summer, it should solarize a garden bed, especially, you know, the hotter the climate you live in, the more sun, the easier this is to do. As you move into like more normal areas, it gets tricky. You get stuck with a rainy month, it's not going to work. But if you get lucky and you get a good, hot, sunny summer, yeah, by the end of the season, you can, you know, take off the plastic, save it if it's still in good shape. And what are you going to plant to replace it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm trying to eliminate grass because it's just a pain and it takes a lot of time and effort and I don't use chemicals, and so I end up with chickweed or dandelions or God knows what.
Well, no, that's not why you end up with those plants if they're in a lawn. You're not caring for the lawn properly and you're giving the edge to the weeds. Very simple. Where you live, most people are growing a cool season grass, like bluegrass or fescue. And that grass gets sown right around the time when you're pulling this plastic up. So you'd be starting with a bed that's already, let's say, receptive, if nothing else. And I would just spread it on the surface, the grass seed, then cover that with like a half an inch of compost or soil and keep that wet and as gently wet as you can for a week, and late summer, early fall is the time these cool season grasses thrive. So it's going to be very aggressive. It's going to take over. You know, if you were a forager, you'd curse it because it's getting in the way of you harvesting your chickweed.
Mm.
So, and from then on, it's real simple. Do you have a lawnmower?
Yes.
Okay, what kind?
An electric with a mulching blade.
Oh, superb. When's the last time you had the blade sharpened?
I just bought a brand new blade for this season.
Excellent. You're in the catbird seat. Except, are we going to try to do the whole front so it looks like a plan?
I would probably do one section at a time because I got three sections, and I want to start with the one with the most chickweed in it.
Okay. Then when you take the cover off, set the blade height to be 3.5 inches and go over it, you know, after the grass is 4 inches. Then you cut it back to 3.5. It will grow rapidly in the fall. That's its fabulous best time of year. It'll grow until frost, and then it'll just go dormant. So keep it cut at 3.5 inches, keep that blade sharp, and the grass will thrive. It will fill in, especially if you've got bluegrass, that'll take care of its own bare spots. And as long as you have a sharp blade, don't cut between 3.5 inches, and, you know, water if we go a week without rain, especially if it's hot and dry. There's no need for chemicals, and no weeds should appear in that plot.
Mm-hmm.
Most people just don't care for their grass correctly. And normally grass like this would also be fed in the fall, not the spring. That weakens it. So sorry, people who are busy fertilizing your lawns. If you have a cool season lawn, you're shooting yourself in the foot. But that should be it. It will crowd out any weeds once you get close to a stale seed bed established. So the right kind of seed, you've got exactly the right kind of mower. Keep the blade at 3.5 inches, and you should be golden. That's it. You know, unless you want to open up a chickweed farm, it sounds like you'd be making some good money there from the foragers.
I appreciate your help, and I've read before that the thick, healthy lawn will crowd out weeds.
And it is true. You will soon find it out.
Well, thanks for your help.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody out there what has a lawn that it will need no chemicals if you care for it correctly, which means you never cut it when it's wet. You only cut it with a sharp blade. And if you need to water, you want to water deeply, longly, and infrequently. And then let it dry out. It really wants to. But don't go checking your watering supplies just yet, because we'll be right back to hear the right ways to deal with spring bulbs that need to be moved and more of your moving phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
Do you have vinyl albums, 45s, or CDs on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the donation, and you can claim a tax deduction. For more information, or to arrange for a drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 or visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, you probably have spring bulbs that ain't looking too good no more. What are you going to do with them? Before we learn what will happen, James and I have a little special thing. I have been, for some reason, reading posts from the Abington Gardening Club. And I'm kind of horrified, of course. That's my job, is to be horrified by what you people do. So I thought that James could read some of the posts and I could respond. Now, to start us off, it was 39 degrees on Sunday the 27th. The famous freeze of 24 degrees occurred on April 20th to the 21st. Mother's Day is the 10th of May. Your average last frost date in the mid-Atlantic is May 11th. Hey, what's your chance of frost after the last average frost date? Oh, a mere 30%. Right. So we're going to come back to that every once in a while. But James, you're going to lead us off with a message from Jessica in Abington, who wrote us on April 23rd.
Jessica writes, first time growing veggies from seeds. Technically, I tried last year, but it didn't work out. This year, I'm hoping to turn that around. My question is, why are my tomatoes and peppers still little weak sprouts? My cucumbers, on the other hand, are amazing. No doubt they will be ready to plant after Mother's Day. What can I do to my tomatoes to ensure they're ready? I did read that I need to harden them off. I will be sending them outside to get used to the weather in the next days to come.
Well, Jessica couldn't hear me, of course, although maybe she heard my screams when I read the post. Without going into a great detail, a first-timer growing veggies from seed is a learning experience. The second year is a less tragic experience. And by the third year, you're going to be teaching people how to do it, but it has nothing to do with gardening per se. Starting seeds indoors, I don't know if it's more difficult or more easy, but there's no connection to outdoor planting. They share almost nothing. Now, your cucumbers, well, they're bigger plants that grow up faster. Are your tomatoes and peppers tall and lanky? They're not getting enough sun. Have you fed them? Maybe a little dilute organic fertilizer is what they need. But how much light are they getting? We're going to hammer this home. A sunny windowsill is Latin for sorry your plants died. What you need is bright lights. I've experimented with so-called plant lights and they don't work. I buy by the lumens. I have old fluorescent tubing. I bought them by the 100,000, I think. And so every year I put a fresh set into my plant lights. If I were starting now, I would use LEDs, but I got all these things and I got to use them. And here's the key, kids. It must be close to the lights. Your plants should be scary close. After about 3 inches, the number of lumens, the light they receive, drops off dramatically. To imitate this giant exploding nuclear thing in the sky we call the sun, they need to be an inch or two away, which is why it's important to have plant lights on chains or to have your plants on bricks or boards or something where you can remove them when they get too big, but keep that 1 or 2 inch thing. What got me screaming, I will be sending them outside to get used to the weather in the next days to come. The next days that came dropped down into the 30s. You know, I don't even think it was nice enough to take them outside many of those days. So don't rush the gun. It's definitely too early to harden off tropical plants like tomatoes and peppers. Oh, James, there's a follow-up.
Jessica sent a photo of her starts under a strange purple plant light.
What is this? Are you using leftover black lights from the 60s? Incense and peppermints. You also have the plants right up against a window. It doesn't look like an insulated window. Put your hand on it and feel it at night. You know, it's probably really cold. Get the plants away from that window if indeed it gets cold there at night. And we are still a month away from hardening off. Nature does not care how impatient we are. James, I believe Jessica responded.
She did. She said, no leftover black lights from the 60s. I wasn't even born yet. This is a newer Amazon purchase with arms that spread. The window is solid, no drafts. I'm not planning to plant until after Mother's Day. Was just asking if there was something else I should be doing, replanting in bigger pots, pushing the tomatoes down in the dirt further, etc.
Well, those are great questions. Real simple. Get a thermometer, put it by that window. If you wake up in the middle of the night, that's great. Go read that thing. And if you read it in the morning, and it's in the 30s or 40s, drafts are not everything. Sheer naked cold is what these plants need to be protected from. But yeah, if the plants are looking good, it would be a good time to plant them up into bigger pots using a nice organic potting soil. Now you ask about pushing the tomatoes down into the dirt further. Well, tomatoes are unique in that they will grow auxiliary roots all along the buried stem. So I would take a sample, turn one of your containers on the side, gently roll it, see how deep the roots go down. They should hit the bottom of the container. So repot them that way. And hey, when you plant them outside, do the same thing. Roots all the way at the bottom of the hole.
Elizabeth also responds, I have similar lights I've used the past 2 years, and I don't think they're enough, even though they were inches away from the plants. I'm going to invest in bigger lights that hang next year.
Ding, ding, ding. Elizabeth has caught on. Inches away from the plants? Now we're in a tricky mess here. As I said, they've got to be right up. I'd rather see a couple of leaves going up into the bulbs than not see them close enough. Fluorescent lights don't give off enough heat to burn the plants. Incandescence, of course, would roast them. But the new LEDs, I think, burn brighter and cooler. So if you're thinking about starting this, it's all you need is LEDs that look like the old fluorescent lights. A two-tube fixture is good if you're not going to plant a lot, but a four-tube fixture is the bee's knees because you don't want the plants on the outside to be getting less light than the ones in the center. And hanging them, excellent.
Mark jumped in, they look good, and a fan will help strengthen the stems and get them ready for the outdoors. Is there good drainage and aeration in the soil?
The fan is a nice idea. Air circulation, believe it or not, makes plants grow thicker, stronger. In the old days, people used to say, get index cards. And when your plants are about 4 weeks old, gently brush the top of them to try to mimic the wind. So fans are always good. Make sure that the fan isn't accidentally blowing cold air on them. What else did he say here? Oh, good drainage is absolutely essential. And aeration in the soil. That's a strange way to put it. But your potting soil, your seed starting soil should be very light and loose. When you're out buying a bag, you want to bag by weight. Inversely, you want to buy the lightest bag there is. And you know I'm a fan of perlite. So, you know, have some perlite there and add that in, because you're right. The roots of the plants do need air, Mark.
Amy opted in. Your grow lights may be too far away. When did you start them? And you also need to keep the light on a lot. Just things to consider.
Now, there's a lot of controversy about how long you need to learn keep the lights on. You know, 12 hours on, 12 hours off is the classic. I have mine on an insulated porch, and there's a plant light over them. I even have a remote control by the TV that I can turn that plant light on and off. Do I remember to do that? Very infrequently. You know, sometimes the lights will be on all night, and people who are working with weak light, you can go out and get yourself a lumen meter to figure out how many lumens the plants are getting. But if they're getting weak light and you can't move anything around, I would say add hours. Now, I have to inject here, there was a different post on this site from April 25th that showed pepper plants with a desk lamp pointed at them. It looks to be about a foot away from the closest trays, and the rest are totally in the dark. That's just cruel. It's a violation of the Geneva Code. The Red Cross is going to be banging on your door any day. A desk lamp is, even if there's a, quote, plant light in there, is not a good substitute. And you can clearly see that half your plants aren't getting light. You must look at these things through real eyes. All right, James, Randall appears to be overly optimistic.
Randall said, couple more days and I'd say we're good to go. I actually got some in before rain hit, so we'll see how that goes.
Couple more days. We still got, what, a solid 2 weeks before Mother's Day. There's a 30% chance of frost. Well, first of all, Mother Nature doesn't know what Mother's Day is, or else we'd all have to get her a card. Mother's Day became a rule rather than an outline, than a guideline. Mother's Day is when you want to get serious and you want to be looking towards the 10-day forecast. Only looking at the nighttime temperatures, and you'll see, maybe you'll see 39. Oh, good. No chance of frost. These are tropical plants. They don't like temperatures under 50, 55 degrees. They'll tolerate them, but they're not amused by numbers in the 40s. So it's real easy to do. And I hope my family isn't listening in. I discovered the other day you can take an oven thermometer, one of those spiky ones, because they go down to low numbers, and put it in the soil. That'll give you a very accurate reading of your soil temperature. This was during one of our warm spells, and it had just hit 50. I like to wait until 55, but nothing beats an accurate measurement. Having them out 2 weeks ahead of the average last frost date with a 30% chance you're going to get nailed after that. I know we're all anxious. And Randall, so we'll see how that goes. Yes, you will. Yes, you will, sir. James, Olivia has some thoughts.
Olivia said, tomatoes need warm temperatures. I have a heating pad under mine and a humidity dome inside. They're doing great. Try that.
Well, that's a complex statement in just a few words. Heating pads I generally reserve for germinating seeds. Once they're in soil, seeds should germinate as quickly as possible for the adult plants to do well. I do use a heating mat under all of my starts, but I turn the heat off after the starts have been up for about a week. I'm worried about overheating, and I'm worried about drying out the mix, you know, which is made to drain well and can desiccate very quickly. The humidity dome, no, absolutely not. The humidity dome is going to trap moisture inside. So yes, you will not have to worry about the water because it will continue to recirculate. But the humidity dome will also prevent any kind of air circulation. And by keeping the plants constantly moist, you could get in a lot of disease trouble, especially with tomatoes. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and deliver the big question. Are you starting seeds indoors for the first or second time? Or have you been doing it for years and the results are dog nasty? Well, I'm here to tell you there is no shame on buying starts. Buy new. And then learn how to start seeds correctly. But don't do that learning just yet, because we'll be right back with how to store and separate spring bulbs. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. Hey, anybody on our crew know what we have planned for next week's show? I'm Mike McGrath, and the crew all ran out of the room, so we got no idea what you'll hear. Join us anyway for the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, and be surprised as the rest of us. Plus your fabulous phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. And yes, we are in the stretch, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll be talking about what to do with those spring bulbs once their flowers are gone. But right now, James and I are having such a good time reading these posts that we're going to continue. Okay, James, looks like we have another season jumper.
Lisa writes, when you harden them off, make sure they're protected, not full sun or full wind. I usually start out with morning sun only so they don't sunburn. You can slowly give them more sun and wind. I find that tomatoes and peppers like warmer soil temps. If you start hardening them off during our warm spell, they should take off.
Or not take off. They could crash and burn because, as all of us in the mid-Atlantic states have endured, really warm spells tend to be followed by Arctic blasts. So if you're going to be hardening them off, which means taking them outside to get acclimated, bringing them in at night, doing that a little more every day. It's a good idea, but don't forget and leave them out, or you may make them struggle. They are tropical plants. They don't like 30s, 40s. Frost is not the issue here. Freezing is not the issue here. Yes, when you go outside in the winter and it's 32, oh, you're cold. You go outside in the winter when it's 39, oh, you're cold. You go outside in the winter when it's 45, oh, I'm cold. So think of your plants the same way. If you don't want to be out in it, don't put your plants in it. James, it looked like Pat is continuing the discussion.
Pat writes, do you have a grow light over them, or are you just working with the light coming through the window? Actually, it looks like from the color that's reflecting off of them that you are using some type of grow light. You may need to put the tomatoes closer to the light source. If they're still in seed starting medium, which has very little nutrition, you may need to transplant them into better soil. Tomatoes tend to grow very fast once they're outside in the ground.
Yes, tomatoes do grow much faster and taller than peppers, which is a good thing to remember if you're growing your own starts. The peppers are going to stay compact. Certain varieties, especially of tomatoes, are going to take off. So one size does not fit all. You're going to have to do some wiggling around to keep everything close to the lights when the height of the plant is radically different. Of course, always put the plants closer to the light source. And seed starting medium, which has very little nutrition, you may need to plant them in better soil. Well, this brings up a quandary or an issue that I don't talk about a lot. You are correct. Especially organically, seed starting mix will have little to no nutrition. It's mostly going to be light and loose, whereby potting soil, again, especially if it's organic, will have worm castings and all sorts of other natural nutrients in it. So again, as before, it is a good idea to pot your plants up into bigger containers so they don't get root bound. And when they go into those bigger containers, you can put them into potting soil, which is still light and loose and almost always has nutrition in it. Just not the miracle nutrition. Hint, hint. Stay with organic and you'll be happy. And James, we close with Amy.
Amy has a classic line, I wait till Mother's Day.
Well, I'm a coward. Mother's Day is just a day where you got to remember to get a card or whatever. I'm looking at the long forecast. Mother's Day, you know, I'm not impressed. It's going to be a week after that where I really even start to pay attention. And then I'm looking at the long-range forecast, but only at night. Daytime temps do not count in this game. We want our plants to be protected from cold nights. So if you're seeing like 39, 41, you should sit on your plants. Give them a feeding, maybe pot them up one more time. If the days are nice, start hardening them off. But if you put them out too soon, okay, doesn't frost, right? Everything's cool. No, they are miserable. They are angry at you. They want to take revenge on you. Chilly nights will set a tomato or pepper plant 2 weeks back. By rushing the season a couple days, you could lose 2 weeks of harvest time. So I'm a coward. June 1st is often a planting day for me. But I want to emphasize, you can't go by the calendar. You got to go by the actual physical weather. As promised, it is time for the question of the week, which we are calling how to move and or separate spring bulbs. Michael in Northern Virginia, near Washington, D.C., writes, can I divide my spring bulbs now? Is after the blooms have faded the best time? Thanks and stay safe from those evil squirrels. Evil is too nice a word for those long-tailed servants of Satan. They're already trying to plant leftover black walnuts in all the containers I'm growing spring lettuce in. They are thwarted, however, by my unrolled tomato cage material arched over the top, hopefully. But it's interesting that you mention those miserable munchers. I had one of the greatest displays of spring ephemerals pop up around our crabapple tree this spring. Snowdrops, glorious snow, bloodroot, hepatica, two different kinds of anemone, spring beauty, Virginia bluebells, toothwort, starflower, wild hyacinth, wood sorrel, and many, many others. But not crocus. I grow them in my front garden. And the wild violets have taken over an area just outside the garden proper. Thought you'd like to know. I have to stop here and thank the website Epic Gardening for helping me remember what I had and their names. Normally, I just sit out there and look at them. If somebody asks me, what's this one's name? I generally say, Harry. Nothing bothered my amazing ephemerals, just like they didn't bother my daffodils. Nothing bothers daffodils, as they are toxic and foul-tasting. Fritillaria are also very critter-proof in the spring garden, whereby everything loves to munch on every part of tulips, bulbs, flowers, entire plants, which leads me back to what this article is supposed to be about, as I have a somewhat similar problem right now. One of the best raised beds in my vegetable garden has somehow become filled with daffodils, and I got lots of edibles that need to be planted there. So I will first give advice to Michael, who simply wants to divide his bulbs, and then reveal the plan for my problem. Michael, do not attempt to divide bulbs right after the flowers fade. As I have mentioned many times, the green leaves must be left unmolested if you want to see flowers next year, because those green leaves are photosynthesizing the energy necessary to grow the following year's blooms. Or just return only with leaves if you cut that greenery off. And yes, this is the main reason that perennial bulbs like daffodils fail to return. The gardener cut off the leaves right after the flower faded to make things look nice and clean in the garden. Anyway, back to Michael's division. Clip off the seed heads that have appeared where the flower used to be, but leave the leaves alone. You can gently remove them later this season when all trace of green is gone. But don't rush it. Then wait for a dry spell and carefully dig the clumps out. Don't do this when the ground is wet, or you will encourage disease problems in storage. Let the clumps dry in a cool, dark area with good air circulation for about a week. Then carefully untangle those tangled roots and cut them off the bulb, but be sure to leave an inch or two of root attached to the bulb. Very important, do not wash them. Moisture is the enemy of stored bulbs. Gently brush off any loose dirt, but only by hand, no scrubbing. Then store the bulbs in a cool, dry place out of the sun, again, protected from mice and such. Hanging them in mesh onion bags is perfect. Just make sure they have good air circulation and they are not exposed to direct sun. Or do what many people do and wrap them in newspapers or milled peat moss to help them retain moisture, and then store that in a cool and dark place that's not in direct sun with some level of mouse protection until Halloween. Between Halloween and Thanksgiving is the perfect time for bulb planting in the mid-Atlantic and similar climates. Southerners should plant later. Do not plant spring bulbs early. It will screw up their vernalization and cause them to sprout too early, and you won't get your flower. And don't feed at planting time. The flower for next spring is fully formed inside the bulb and needs no food. The best time to feed bulbs is after the flowers have faded in the spring. So what am I going to do? As Mr. Spock famously said on an episode of classic Star Trek, I believe I shall take a risk. I'm going to wait until early evening on a non-scorching day. I have already prepared the bed they will move to. It was filled with hostas, and I already have to weed whack half the hostas we got out there. I will have been slowly deep watering the bed they're in, and then I will begin grabbing them by the clump as close to the ground as possible and begin to slowly pull them out. Clumps that pull up easily will be transplanted to their new home immediately. If a clump resists, more water and maybe a little gentle hand digging around the edges. Just don't harm these roots. When you're finished, water the newly planted bed deeply and spread compost on top. Note, I am not separating my bulbs at this point. The idea is to move them so gently and without stress that they won't even know they got moved. I may, however, separate them later on when all the greenery is brown. I'll clean up the roots just a touch and replant them in the same bed because they're already where they need to be. That sure was a lot of good information about how to not destroy your spring bulb blooms for next year and maybe divide them, move them, all kinds of fun. Luckily, you can read those details over at your leisure or your leisure by following the link for the Gardens Alive question of the week at the top of the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes! My producer is threatening to hide my spring bulbs if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime, and we do want your phone calls. 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse, teeming to our garden shore, at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. And as always, if you happen to live anywhere, please ask somebody where it is and tell us. And visit our Facebook page, where we post new photos of our gardens and invite you to send us photos of your precious plants. Share your thoughts about the show. Receive important and informative updates about the show, a link to the written version of the Gardens Alive question of the week, and links to our priceless podcast. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when he read every issue of Doctor Strange from the beginning to the end. And that's why he's a little simple today. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprud. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I do not like living in this twilight zone. I mean, all the spring bulbs are gone. I can't plant any more lettuce. I got no place left to put it. Yeah, my snow peas are up and looking good. But what am I going to do for the next month? I want to get out there and plant. So I'll probably try and be patient until I see you again next week. Yeah.